Good day, and welcome to the Magnet fourth quarter 2020 operating and unaudited financial results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Albert Avedikov. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us to discuss Magnet's operating and unaudited financial results for the fourth quarter of 2020 and full year. With me to review the results are, as usual, Dmitry Ivanov, acting CFO, and our CEO, Jan Danning. The announcement and respective presentation are available on our website. After our remarks, as usual, we will look forward to taking your questions. Before we jump into the results, I would also like to remind you that today's financial results are based on the management accounts. With that, I now turn the call over to Magnet CEO, Jan Danning. Jan, please.
Yeah. Thanks, Albert, and good day, everyone. Thanks for joining. Yeah, you remember that we started last year by introducing key strategic priorities for the business. The team had to focus on qualitative improvements in the stores and margin regain. In the second half of the year, we put most of attention to working capital improvements and still kept the main focus on like-for-like top line and margin improvement. Pandemic has also forced us to speed up reduction of debt burden. Despite macro headwinds and many other unpredictable and extraordinary challenges, I believe we delivered all what we promised. Looking at the fourth quarter, we delivered another set of strong results. We again showed double-digit sales growth, and this was driven by a hefty uplift in the mature stores and at a much lesser extent by selling space growth. We resumed our expansion and redesign program, thanks to improved returns on new openings. We delivered industry-leading like-for-like sales growth of 7.5%, by far outpacing inflation, and our sales density increased by 6.5%. EBITDA margin improved by 160 basis points on better commercial terms, efficiency gains, and operating leverage. We managed to release more than 30 billion rubles of cash out of the working capital, and our leverage reduced one time in a single year to 1.1 of net debt to EBITDA. Finally, we finished the year with outstanding free cash flow position of 85 billion rubles. The results speak for themselves. The fact that we achieved almost twice higher returns on the whole business just within one single year, I consider as remarkable. We're entering 2021 with a completely different financial position, and this is a decent foundation for faster profitable growth and next phase of retail and digital transformation. Now, let me add some color to the quarter developments. We achieved strong like-for-like sales growth in the mature stores and resumed our expansion. The sales growth was double-digit, driven by solid performance of the like-for-like stores. As a result, total sales growth of 10.6% was a combination of like-for-like sales growth of 7.5% and selling space growth of 3.6%. In the fourth quarter, we accelerated our expansion program underpinned by strong return dynamics and opened 445 stores on gross basis, more than in any quarter of 2020 and higher year-on-year. Same time, we closed only 35 stores, the lowest number in any quarter of 2020. Thus, we passed the bottom of selling space growth. Same to previous quarters, the main contribution to like-for-like sales growth came from mature stores. Younger stores continued, of course, delivering strong double-digit like-for-like sales growth, but the share of these first-year stores in the like-for-like panel was just 1.7%. The like-for-like sales growth was positive across all formats and all regions and all vintages. It accelerated in the core convenience format and turned positive in the supermarkets and superstores. We overcame countrywide trend when consumers avoided visiting large stores and shopping malls. Drogeries remained a leader with double-digit like-for-like sales growth. We still see COVID effect, which we estimate at around 2.2% on a like-for-like basis. Other company-specific trends included a weak frequency of visits due to pandemic, partly offset by continuous inflow of unique customers, higher average spend per visit. Drivers of like-for-like ticket were volume growth, trading up, and on-shelf inflation. Strong trading up was a result of ongoing assortment changes and inflow of more affluent customers. We estimate that large part of these new richer customers trade down to Magnit thanks to our value offering and improved assortment. On-shelf inflation accelerated on the back of increased food CPI and lower promotional activity. We continue to attract customers from larger formats, some small players, and unorganized retail. All regions demonstrated sound like-for-like results in each month of the quarter, with Moscow and Northwest in a double-digit growth zone. We note double-digit like-for-like sales growth in fruit and veg, the fastest-growing category throughout the whole year and one of the key drivers of our new CVP. The promo intensity remained lower year-on-year with a focus on efficiency. The promo activity in the industry remained rational. It has moderately picked up compared to the third quarter due to the seasonal factor, but remained lower on a year-to-year basis. We hope that the market stays rational in 2020 as well. Currently, we don't see any reason to intensify our promo activity and will focus on driving sales by CVP improvements. Our e-com initiatives are gaining traction. Since the second half of 2020, we have launched 6 e-com pilots, including own express and regular delivery, partnerships, and click-and-collect options. Today, over 1,000 stores in 47 regions and 72 cities are covered. Around 50% of the current revenue are generated outside Moscow and St. Pete. The average ticket for Magnit's own delivery service was about ruble 1,600, which is 4.5 times higher than in the offline stores. We fulfilled around 6,000 orders a day, and according to our data, most of the orders were placed by customers who didn't shop at brick-and-mortar stores before. During 2021, we plan to expand online delivery, adding at least 1,500 stores in more than 50 regions across Russia. Now a bit on the recent trading. We saw strong momentum in January. Total sales growth remained double-digit, almost fully matching previous quarter's average, and it continues by far outpacing space growth. The like-for-like sales growth came in line with the fourth quarter average, despite much stronger base. And what is important, this strong trading was achieved despite much lower promotional activity. Our promo share in January was down versus the first quarter average. So we're not driving sales by promo and sustain very healthy margins. No change in consumer patterns. Lower frequency is overcompensated by higher spend per visit. The strong basket is first driven by growing number of articles, and economic environment remains tough with weak consumer incomes and purchasing inflation. But it's too premature to assess the potential impact of that. Now let me pass the floor to Dimitri to walk you through our financial results.
Thank you, Jan. And good day, everyone. Let me start with gross profit margin. Gross profit margin improved by 168 basic points and stood at 23.3% of sales. We had positive impact from the following factors. First of all, we improved commercial terms with suppliers. Slowdown of promo share by 1 percentage point, which also came with better promo funding from suppliers and higher promo margin. Shrinkage improved by 44 basic points despite increased share of fresh food and sales. Our supply chain costs slightly improved on lower transportation expenses. We had favorable format mix. These positive factors were partly offset by continuous investments in the loyalty program. If you look at the dynamics on a quarterly basis, it reflects some seasonality driven by assortment mix, moderately higher promotional activity, and higher penetration of loyalty card sales. A few words about SG&A. SG&A expenses remained under strict control. SG&A's percent of sales were down 41 basic points. We had negative COVID impact of 11 basic points for almost half a billion rubles. Staff costs went down 13 basis points on higher productivity of in-store personnel and record low staff rotation. Lease expenses improved by 31 basis points on increased sales density, better rates per square meter, and closing of inefficient stores, which offset growing share of lease space. Depreciation of assets improved by 39 basis points, driven by growing sales density across all formats and slower expansion. It was partially offset by non-cash impairment provision in the amount of 1.1 billion rubles. Advertising expenses increased by 53 basis points on higher marketing activities, including Skripishi and other loyalty campaigns, as well as digital marketing. Some other costs were affected by inflation and compensated by positive operating leverage effects. As a result, EBITDA margin showed strongest year-on-year recovery by 160 basis points and stood at 7%. For the fourth consecutive quarter, EBITDA margin is improving, driven by gross profit margin recovery and better SG&A expenses. Adjusted for LTI expenses, EBITDA margin would be 5 basis points higher, or 7.1%. Net interest expenses improved by 34 basis points, thanks to reduced cost of debt and debt repayments, leading to lower total amount of debt. We had foreign exchange income of 419 million rubles related to direct import operations. As a result, net income tripled to 11.1 billion rubles with a margin of 2.7%. Effective tax rate was 21%. We managed to release 30.5 billion rubles of cash out of working capital. Our initiatives aimed at improvement of working capital cycle started to pay off. In fourth quarter, we managed to decrease inventories by 12.9 billion rubles compared to end of 2019, despite total sales growth of 13.5%, increased share of drug reformers, higher on-shelf availability, and higher supplier inflation. Trade and other payables remained flat year-on-year, as extension of payment terms in trade payables were technically offset by other payables reduction due to high pace of expansion in 2019. Accounts receivable decreased by 5.4 billion rubles. This came as a result of ongoing optimization initiatives, including weekly tracking of overdue debts and clearing activities, as well as launch of electronic document flow with suppliers. We continue to focus on further improvements in the working capital, primarily through the reduction of turnover in days. We finished the year with very strong free cash flow position of 85 billion rubles. Our net operating cash flow doubled year-on-year, driven by a combination of sound sales growth, improved margin, and positive working capital changes. CapEx in 2020 decreased by 45% and stood at 32.1 billion rubles on lower investments in expansion and redesign, economy gains from more efficient project execution, and some slippage for 2021. Due to pandemic, we had less openings in the second and third quarters, but in fourth quarter, you see strong pickup of our space growth. Also, we significantly improved our debt burden on the back of deleveraging, lower costs, and increased duration. At the end, our gross debt was 166 billion rubles, which is 18 billion rubles lower versus last year. With almost 45 billion rubles of cash on hand, net debt stood at 121 billion rubles. Duration of the debt portfolio increased from 17 months at the beginning of the year to 22 months. Debt profile has also improved. As of now, long-term bank debt and bonds account for 99% of total portfolio. All are at fixed rates. 2021 is well secured for us, with only 9% of debt to be refinanced or repaid. Cost of debt dropped to historical lows of 6.1%, down 1 percentage point year-on-year with some further upside. Net debt to EBITDA ratio improved to 1.1 times EBITDA versus 2.1 a year ago. This is way below our comfortable level of around 1.5 times. And now I will give the floor back to Jan for guidance review and some closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Dima. Now, during 2020, we've substantially improved sales densities thanks to the revamped CVP. In combination with better profitability, we got to very attractive return profiles for new openings and redesigns. This encourages us, of course, to continue with smart expansion. This year, we plan to open up around 2,000 stores and redesign around 700 stores, which is a big step up versus last year. Capital expenditures projections for 2021 of around 60 to 65 billion ruble reflect increased growth ambitions, as well as ongoing spending on efficiency projects. Yes, we benefited from macro environment last year, but most of the improvements came because of self-measures. Economic situation remains difficult, with a growing pressure on customer wallets. Overall, we feel we are well equipped to continue profitable growth in our business. With strong balance sheet, cash generation, and further upside in working capital, we see enough flexibility to fulfill our growth ambition in a combination with cash distribution to shareholders. Thanks for listening.
John, thank you. We are ready for the Q&A session.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star followed by one. Star one if you wish to queue for a question. We'll pause for a brief moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will take our first question from Maxim Nezrakovov from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Max Nekrasov from Goldman Sachs. Congratulations with very strong results and free cash flow achieved this year. I have a few questions actually on this and on capital allocation. So the first one is regarding your leverage. So basically, what is the maximum level of leverage that you would not want to exceed in the medium term? And could us once again remind what is the optimal leverage do you see in the medium term? And also related question on dividends. So basically, how do you envisage dividends going forward? And do you plan any commitment to a certain dividend policy? And if not, just how do you think about dividends going forward and whether you see potential for gradual dividend increase? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Maxime. Let me answer the first question. Leverage is, of course, not a fixed thing in the sense of when I last year was having a 2.1, seeing the interest rates actually still quite high and my returns as an average of the business on a low level, you understand that leverage is then on your agenda. And that's why also with regards to the recovery of the business, we were focusing on like-for-like performance because that creates the biggest return in boost. Second is margin regain, and the last part is also capital allocation, so working capital efforts. If you ask me now concrete in the current environment with the interests on a low level, I think now with the 1.1, we're actually very comfortable with leverage. It's potentially even low. And we have always stated that we would like to see a comfortable leverage of 1.5. But like I said, it's a dynamic thing. The most important is, are we able to find investments with the proper returns? Because just to go and make sure that I'm on a leverage of 1.5 by investing into products which in the end do not have the appropriate returns is not the best option as well. Where I would feel uncomfortable, and especially looking at the size of our business, but it also depends, is around 2. I think 2 is the max I would like to go to. But it also looks at the outlook. If you have 1 year more and you know that it's going to recover in the sense that you just as an example, an acquisition, and you know that in the year after you'll see enough synergies to bring that back to the appropriate level, then that's something that you can discuss with me. But for the time being, I think I would see, looking at the interest rates, looking at our returns, at 1.5 is a good number. Yeah. Then the dividend question, I think that's a question I would like to hand over to Albert.
Yeah, Maxim, thanks for the question. We fully understand this is an important part of the story. So first of all, this is a priority of the board to provide a recommendation to the shareholders making decisions on dividends. You know, Magnitis has a good track record of sustainable and strong dividend payments, and looking at the financial position with which we finished 2020, and which was extremely strong and with very low leverage, we feel that this provides enough flexibility to see a combination of fast return-driven expansion and strong cash distribution to shareholders. But again, we leave it up to the board to decide on a specific level. Our first priority, as for the management team, is to grow the business with a strong focus on higher returns. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very clear.
We will move on to our next question from Nick Kovalev of VTB. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hello to everybody. I have a couple of questions on mostly on the top line. So previously you disclosed a very upbeat pace of 9.5% for the beginning of January. So can you maybe comment to us to what extent it was further translated in January and maybe early February, and given the base, how much it could be ahead of your, maybe by the magnitude, ahead of your annual forecast for this year? And also the second question is on the inflation. We see across the country it's picking up for food. So can you also share with us to what on-shelf inflation you see now and where you see it also in the next couple of quarters maybe? Thanks.
Hi, Nikolai. Let me just jump into the first question, and then Jan and Dima can continue. Just to explain on the recent trading, which covers January, you are absolutely right. We provided the market with total sales and like-for-like for the first 10 days of January when we issued our New Year sales results. Now we are ready to provide the market with full month results. If we look at total sales growth, it fully matches the average for the fourth quarter. If we look at like-for-like sales growth, it's more or less in line, very close to the average of the fourth quarter. And what is the most important, that comes with much lower promo activity versus fourth quarter, and especially versus seasonally high level in December. So again, we're driving sales not by promo, but by qualitative improvements in the stores, keeping healthy level of margins.
What I would like to remind as well is the, bear in mind that this is a like-for-like on a strong base of last year as well. So the base has improved, and that's what we will see in, because the second part of the question was on the outlook. We will have periods where it will be difficult to match last year's sales due to the speculative buying of consumers, but we're actually quite confident that the plan that we have in mind is what we are cruising on, and that we will bring that in.
And let me add to this, Jan, particularly with promo share, because given our promo share is down versus previous quarter, we can expect quite acceptable margins level in January.
Yeah.
And coming back to second part of the question with regard to inflation, food inflation levels, in December we saw inflation's level, food inflation level in line with central bank, Rostat food CPI. So we have almost similar level, plus minus. And in general, we expect the same levels, but maybe with some acceleration. Yeah.
Nikolai, I hope that answers your both questions, right?
Yeah, I mean, both, for sure. Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Henrik Herbst of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks very much. I had a few questions as well. I mean, first one, I just want to follow up on the first question regarding dividends. And Albert, I think you mentioned that you obviously got a history of sustainable dividends and dividend growth, et cetera. I mean, how do you think about that from the perspective of obviously very strong cash flow in 2020 and balance sheet position? I mean, are you happy to sort of set the dividend at a sort of a one-off level and then be happy to bring it down again next year? Or do you want to sort of continue to grow the dividend over time? And just because it was a one-off year in terms of strong cash flow, we shouldn't view that as sort of you're giving back a one-off big dividends. But it could be high, but not, yeah. And then the other question I want to share, I mean, the very low store closures, as you mentioned, in Q4, I was just wondering whether that's by any chance sort of COVID-related and just pushed out store closures into 2021, or do you think that it is actually a result of or the improved CVP and it's just business performing better and you're seeing sort of an underlying improvement? And then, sorry, the last question was just on the online business where you're saying a lot of the customers were actually not customers in your brick and mortar stores. Can you maybe, do you know where they used to shop for food before if they didn't shop in your stores? Thanks very much.
Thank you. Now let me answer this question. Of course, it's not your intention to pay dividends and then the year after change the payout fully or be insecure on what's the dividend payments in the end. It of course is and stays an authority of the board to propose. So as a management, we're more into execution than deciding. If I look at the discussions, I it's clear that we would like to see a sustainable dividend payout. If I look also at the, and we've seen that last year, part of last year, which is also what we did in the announcement, is we've been spending less capex. Therefore, as well, we're a bit richer in cash and had the opportunity to pay dividends like we did. But, of course, we know that shareholders do not like big deviations in payout. So we have come to an amount of dividend which we think we can sustain in the next couple of years. So the next one is the store closes. Part of, because we closed 35 stores, so part of the stores that you close is, of course, as well because of your expansion. So we were opening more stores, and some of the stores are just replacement of existing older buildings. I do not know the exact numbers, but I know that has an impact. And, yeah, there's also there are also store closures of stores that have been successful in the past or have never been successful in the past, but then came into a red zone where we feel that because of the infrastructure, road changes, apartment block changes, that we feel, okay, this is not a good proposition anymore, so let's close. What is good to see is that actually the number is relatively low, and that actually confirms that our CVP efforts to lift up the whole base of like-for-like to a level that we're much more profitable and therefore take out much higher returns out of the assets, is paying off. Then the last one, the online business, What's important is that we started already earlier in the year, and actually we also have been profiting from the pickup because of COVID, but we did that through partnership. It was not us and our platform. It was actually we were using our purchasing power to support platforms to run e-commerce. We did it partly because we wanted to learn the trick. We wanted to know the operating model and what are the issues to pay attention to. But over time, especially in the fourth quarter, we opened up our e-pharma and we opened up our e-grocery. And we see that that is now picking up and we see increase of orders. And the number that I was mentioning is actually already the number of last year, fourth quarter. We're currently already on a level of around 7,500 orders a day. So you see that in January is growing steadily, and February will see the same dynamic. So in this respect, we're actually quite optimistic. We're keeping on investing in e-commerce. What is also important to highlight is that it's not only just about e-commerce, it's also about digitalization. So how much insight do we get in our business? And that gets to your question. Yeah, we have the insight with the data that we have that we are attracting new customers. And we have the insight that part of the customers that are with us on the e-grocery side are not our brick-and-mortar customers, are not our traditional customers. We do not know where they come from, but we do know that they start to shop with Magnet. So I hope this answers a bit the question.
Henrik, and just...
It does, thanks so much.
On store closure program, we had a wide one last year and closed around 450 stores, right? Speaking on about 2021, as we provided guidance on growth basis, we do not expect any significant number of store closures, with just limited stores to be closed. So on net basis, it will be very close to the gross numbers which we provided.
Great, thanks so much.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. We'll move on to our next question from Murat Ibrahimovic. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much for the question. The question is about your negotiation with suppliers. Your progress in life in top line growth was very clear, very visible through the year. And the question is, when you negotiated the last time, I guess at the end of the year, with your suppliers, did you use this argument that you are now in much better shape, you are selling more products, etc., to improve your supply terms further? Thank you.
Yeah, of course, the supply negotiations happen actually every, for sure, at the end of the year for the new year, but even within the year you do the supply negotiations if you feel that there is a reason to. So there's a couple of dynamics in supplier negotiations. It's first transparency towards each other, partnership, to which extent do you help the supplier and does the supplier help you? And that's on shelf availability, on claim correspondence, on being available for innovations. And I think that has improved a lot. The mentality in Magnet was more like we do negotiations with a knife on the table. But I understand, and they understand by now as well, that potentially by trying to work as partners together and create win-win, you gain more. So that's one dynamic. The second dynamic is, of course, in the negotiations, the number of SKUs that you carry of one and the same supplier is, of course, defining what kind of discount you get, the growth rate that you show, the relative growth rate. So are you gaining market share in the segment? And of course also the innovations. And I think that whole spectrum creates a willingness for suppliers to invest. And I think that's where we have improved a lot. There's still a lot to be done. But overall, I think that's where we made big steps. Yeah.
Yes, and I hope you also use your argument. You're planning to significantly accelerate your store openings, right?
That's the growth argument. But the where suppliers are also interested in, like we are as well, because we invest into digital to make sure that we start to understand our customers better. So transparency for a supplier is also important. For him, it's also important, okay, what kind of target, what kind of customer group do we reach in Magnet with this range of assortment? Now, to be more open and transparent about this, suppliers are willing to then tailor promotions, compensate better for promotions, and then, of course, always the volume argument. Yeah.
In other words, you want to additionally capitalize to win from better knowledge of your customers to sell you this data and to do joint promo campaigns. Am I right?
Now, it's not only about selling. So, because once again, I know negotiations is about money, but negotiations is also about if I can give information to suppliers so that we can become better in promotion, better in promo compensation, better in defining the volumes that we need for the promo, then that's also money. So it's not only, okay, sit here, supplier, now I have an offer, you can't resist, and you have to pay for it. It's also, I need suppliers to improve my business as well. And I think that's the mentality we need to get in, because the moment the supplier understands this better, he will serve us better. And it's all about top line, and therefore also how do I take the money? And I mentioned that already once in an earlier call. It's not the if I look at the contracts that we have, the problem is not our contracts. The contracts are pretty okay. The problem is execution. And what's in there more? So do we cover everything? No, we don't. So let's sit and see where there's more to get. And I think that's where the whole commercial department has done an extreme good job, starting actually already from the first and second quarter, and that continues.
Okay, and then another driver of your gross margin growth is growing share of personalized promo instead of mass promo, and that means that I suggest that your gross margin will continue growing next year. If I true, I'm correct. Could you please give some guidance on by how much basis points do you think your gross margin will expand?
Now, I'm not going to guide on improvement of gross margin, but I see opportunities to improve. Getting to your personalized part is, yes, with a loyalty card, we have become smarter. We know better what customers want, and we can target those groups. We can create those groups. And we're also into creating clubs, where we also therefore have tailored promotions. And that gets back to my answer to the earlier question. That's information suppliers like. There's also information I'm willing to share with suppliers to understand, okay, this is a group of customers that is interested in your products. And this is a group of products that actually has reacted on your innovations. And that on that kind of information, but also targeting and getting a better on-shelf availability, I am able to get more money out of my sales.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. There's
one thing you should remember, and it's a bit of an old saying, but you don't make margins with negotiation. You make margins with sales.
Okay. So you want to have win-win situation with your suppliers, not someone winning, someone losing. Right.
Yeah.
And on working capital, part of the reason why your working capital much lower store openings, a few stores. Next year you are accelerating this year. I mean, shall we expect some working capital investments and therefore lower operating cash flow because of that?
Mario, thank you for question. You should understand that this year we started from, I would say, low base, and we collected low-hanging fruits in terms of improvement of our working capital, working with inventories, payables, and receivables. Still, improvement of working capital remains one of our main priorities for next year and for outer years. We have several projects in place which we already started in 2020 and will continue in 2021. Also, we have several new projects which will help us to improve certain components of working capital. We believe that we will be able to deliver this improvement despite growing sales, despite quite a big number of new stores openings with needed investments into inventories, despite change in assortment and other so-called negatively influencing factors in terms of working capital. And also, which is quite important to notice here, that we plan to strengthen our working capital cycle without any pressure on our profitability, on our margins.
Also in this respect, we are investing currently in a new F&R tool.
Yeah.
I don't think that will be effective this year, but at least from next year onward, that will also help to improve working capital. Because the F&R tool is a complicated one that we have currently. So our ability to forecast and to especially do the demand forecast is quite complicated.
Marat, we have a long list of initiatives, part of which have been already launched. Part are in our plan. You can find this list in our regular IR presentation. And yes, we do target further improvements in turnover days.
Okay, thank you very much. That's it from my side.
We will now move on to our next question from Alexander Nyurzov from VTB Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Gentlemen, greetings. Congratulations on the results. Actually, many of my questions were answered. I just have, suppose, one clarification question. Did I get it right that by year-end 21, you assume that net debt is going to be at the level of 1.5 times, right?
No, that's not what I have said. I explained that a leverage level is depending on the number of products that you have and the returns that you can achieve. I would feel comfortable with 1.5, which is not, so I'm not saying that we will end up on 1.5. Once again, the net debt leverage ratio is very much depending on how can you allocate your finance, how can you allocate your money, and are those products indeed giving the right returns? And we are a return-led business. We've got a pretty strict CAPEX process in place, but the moment we have enough projects that we think makes a lot of sense, I'm willing to move up to a 1.5. And even if it's very accretive, potentially as a max, I might move up to 2. Yeah, but it's always with a view to returns, because it should create shareholder value.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. And just the second one, clarification question. Do I remember, recall collectively that your discounter pilot project, My Price, is going to have 100 stores in 2021?
Yes. What we have decided is that after the pilot of we extended last year to 16, and we have a plan now to at least get to 100. But that's not set in stone. We have internally now the decision, let's get 100. But if I can get 200, and they once again, and they are returning like they do, then that's the number. Now, we're actually quite excited with the model, and we see quite enough traction. There's also, by the way, still quite enough improvements necessary, but for now it's a good model. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's clear.
We will now move on to our next question from Alexei Krasnoshova from Prosperity. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the call, and obviously congratulations with pretty strong results. I would like to ask you questions, if I may. I guess, firstly, you've been quite successful in bringing down shrinkages through the last maybe year and a half. Do you think there is more to go, or are we now more or less at the level where we should be?
Okay. Yeah, you answer the question.
Yeah, let's
go. You're the expert.
Okay. Good afternoon. Shrinkage is one of the problems which we face solved in 2020, and we still see quite a good potential to improve some margins and from shrinkage. And we believe that the level somewhere below 3% of sales is achievable with a mix of our formats and current system that we have.
Yeah, but can I add here, Alexei, as well, is shrinkage is a result of process. So what you see is if you open up more new stores, that those new stores bring in a higher shrinkage because people have to get used to how to work. We need to see the right forecasting in place. So I do believe, and I do totally agree with Dina. I do think that we have opportunities still to improve, but don't expect the improvements which we showed last year.
Okay, I guess clear. That was my question. Secondly, we have seen quite nice improvements in sales densities, new stores, old stores, maturity adjusted stores, like-for-like, it doesn't matter. But obviously it has been up quite nicely this year. It's still kind of below, levels of 4 or 5 years ago, but it has returned to, meaningful levels for the small stores. But I guess the hypermarkets, which are now called supermarkets, but which are still, hypermarkets, are still, largely underperforming. What is your current thinking there? And, do you have any plans in place? And can you please comment on that?
By the way, I totally agree with you. Bear in mind, Alexei, that we improved the sales densities in the hypers because we were showing a like-for-like plus, very small. But the execution and especially the CVP, there is a good CVP plan, but the assortment that we have in the hypermarkets is currently not yet on the level I would like to see it. So that's where we're working on, and we spend actually quite a lot of time to get that done. But you're right, the hypers are not on the density levels that I would like to see. Therefore, also, you see in store opening plan that we relatively open little amount of hypers as because of the densities, the returns are less attractive than the returns of convenience or cosmetics.
I see. Can you also comment, if that's possible, about pharma? Because I guess there were some plans in the past to open pharmacies, which I guess then were kind of postponed, and then we talk about wonderful e-grocery, e-pharmacy, but still, do you still have some plans to speed up or open physical pharmacies?
Yes, the plan is still there, although we need to be fair as well, the pharmacy industry starts to move more and more into online, so we've invested into online e-pharmacy. That does not mean that we will stop growing, but I think we need to adjust the growth path. As if you look at the Russian market, 30-40% of pharmacy is done online. So we should spend a lot of energy and time on e-commerce. Yeah.
And maybe let me add to this, Jan, because we believe that with our pharmacy source, we can still cover quite an important mission in our CVP,
mm-hmm.
where we have convenience store or grocery or drogery and pharmacy nearby or inside. Yeah. And we are focused on improving performance of our pharmacies. We spent also a lot of time on it, and we see the respective potential. Yeah. And when we succeed with the right business formula, maybe we can take a decision to roll out significantly also this.
I agree, but we like I said, we need to balance out, okay, where does that market move to? Because if it's going to be an online market, then I would like to step down with the growth. But for the time being, we're monitoring that. The with regards to pharma, we would like to grow that business. Yeah.
Clear. And I guess final two questions, and I promise. You did say that you estimate a positive COVID impact on like-for-like of 2.5%, if I kind of heard it correctly. Is it for Q4?
Alexei, could you repeat, please, the question on COVID effect on like-for-like basis? And the question is
from
on...
What I, yeah. Yes, from what I heard, or maybe I just got it wrong, Jan said that the positive COVID impact on like-for-like is 2.5%. Is it
2.2%, Alexei?
2.2%. It's 2.2 on Q4 like-for-like, yeah? This is how you estimated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
And guys, can I ask you, how do you work around this number? Because, I mean... there are no lockdowns anymore. Why do you think there's some positive COVID impact?
We knew you would come up with a question.
Yeah, Alexei, let me answer this question. How we came to 2.2% as impact of COVID on our like-for-like sales. So we just compared two sales lines with two different seasonalities. Our normal seasonality based on pre-COVID environment and COVID seasonality. And then on our normal seasonality, which is pre-COVID, we added some factors which we can influence on, like CVP improvement, like availability improvement, other factors, also change in inflation. And then delta between our kind of normalized seasonality and actual seasonality, including COVID, is exactly this COVID impact on like-for-like sales. So this is just delta K.
Or maybe it's just you're doing some better work or something else. Who knows?
That might be. But then that's a positive surprise for this quarter.
Mm-hmm. Because in reality, seriously speaking, I mean, there's no real operational negative impacts from COVID. I mean, everything is functioning in the way it used to function. Last year. So you shouldn't really expect anything of that nature.
Yes and no, and I think that's what Dima explains. So what we do still see is a changed behavior of customers due to COVID, which is they visit less often, but they buy much more. So maybe that's the new reality.
Mm.
Then yeah. We see what we see, and so but that's of course difficult to assess.
Yeah. Final question. You did mention that you planned this supplier inventory management in warehouse, which I guess sounds quite cool. How one should estimate the positive impact on inventory or any other kind of operational financial metrics on this, and how would you actually run it, given the fact that basically it's still going to be your warehouse and space is limited, and I guess there are many suppliers. I think it's quite... well, operationally, should be quite challenging.
So I don't have the numbers of improvement. Well, what I can explain to you is what's the difference between how we work now and how it should be. So what you now have, we don't have an integrated program. We have different 1S programs that then have to be aggregated. And out of those, we need to then ventilate an order for the suppliers. In the new F&R system, it's one platform where there's no manual work done anymore, and we just can project, okay, based on all kind of parameters and algorithms that we have in, that this is based on sales last year, this year, temperature, etc., promo. This is the order that has to go out. And we believe that the new program should create advantages in stock days, as it's simply more accurate.
And Jan, let me add to this, coming back to suppliers' inventory management system. First of all, this will lead to improvement of service level, of supplier service level on our DCs, and therefore better service level from DCs to stores. And therefore, it will help us to have better availability in stores and much lower level of lost sales. Yeah. So this is the logical consequences of why these systems are very useful and how we can estimate financial implications after implementation.
Okay, it's all very clear. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We will now move on to our next question from Igor McCabe of Rasvien Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good evening and congratulations on good results. I actually have a couple of questions. So my first question is, could you please elaborate on the benefits of having your own payment system and, well, maybe provide more details regarding your plans of the Super App? And my second question is, could you please provide the split for this year between organic expansion, redesign, maintenance, and efficiency projects, and maybe highlight the most important efficiency projects to be carried out this year?
Now, MPay is, of course, we're very happy with it. It gives us the opportunity, especially on e-commerce, to be much more efficient and quicker in payments. Potentially, if that really is launched and it's sets off, it also helps us to reduce the acquiring fee, because as you know, the banks are greedy. So I am spending on an annual basis 0.6 of my margin on acquiring fees. I remember that my old finance director always mentioned that was the most biggest legalized theft he has ever seen. So that the 0.6 will come down, and therefore we see also financial benefits. But it's important that MPay is getting an introduction and a good launch. It is currently working, and the more people that will start using this, the better it will be for us.
Yeah, and maybe let me take second question with regard to CAPEX structure. So around 60% of planned CAPEX for 2021 will be allocated to expansion, including new store openings, redesign, and maintenance CAPEX. The rest we plan to spend on supply chain, for example, new trucks fleets recently announced, and several IT and efficiency projects, including e-com initiatives or IT projects, which are quite important for us, like ERP implementation, F&R implementation, and et cetera.
Igor, hope that answers your question, right?
Thank you. Yes, that's pretty clear. Just on my first question, well, maybe you could share your plans regarding Super App in general, like what else do you plan to add there?
That's actually going to be called the heart of our ecocenter that we are going to build, which primarily will be focused on initial stage is customer and customer needs. So we're working on nutrition, part of the sustainability policy that we have in place on giving people more information about healthy living. So recipes, lifestyle, that kind of info will be in, but there will also be info in on promo, on you will have your personalized cabinet potentially, and therefore see, okay, what kind of individualized promos are there for me. The app will also contain, by the way, the employees info about I can log in and see when will my next salary round be coming in. Where am I with my KPI fulfillment? And there's a lot of initiatives. We have to do it now, tailored and step by step. But the idea is to create an app, and in that app, have all the alternative applications in.
Thank you. That's clear.
Yeah.
We will now move on to our next question from Kirill Panarin of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi, everyone, and thanks for the call. Two questions from me. Firstly, just wanted to follow up on promo activity. So you said the environment is stable and promo share was down year on year in Q4. But at the same time, it looks like there was quite a material increase in advertising costs during the quarter. Could you comment on that, please? Isn't that a sign of higher need to invest in order to sustain growth? Not in prices directly, but in marketing anyway. And second, quickly, just given the strong like-for-likes in Moscow and St. Pete regions, how many of the 2,000 openings this year are going to be in those regions? That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Kirill. I'm actually quite convinced that the promo activity is on the proper level for the businesses that we are in. Because what we've seen, and I think I mentioned that on the previous call as well, what you see in times of insecurity, and COVID clearly is an insecure time, is that people look for security. They look for value. So what I think we should do is we should not just do promo for promo's sake. We should do promo for customer's sake. So have relevant promo items with a price that's attractive. And I've seen a period as well, also within Magnet, where promo was somehow the idea to drive traffic, and we were slashing prices, we were investing into margins, where actually what we were achieving is that customers more and more didn't understand our price policy. So by having a stable promo approach, with a price strategy and policy aligned with the suppliers, I think we're much better off and we create much more, call it value for our customers. You've noticed indeed that the marketing expenses went up. I can give you two reasons why. The first one is our Creeper C action, which is this plastic, which is very popular with the kids, and that was an expensive promotion, but created quite a lot of traffic and loyalty. So I think overall we're very satisfied with that investment. And the second part is also with the way we have started doing promotions, we have changed the mix a bit. So in the marketing mix, we went into a bit more expensive TV, for instance, moving from radio, and that also had an impact. I don't know, Dima, whether you know whether other...
Let me add some color to this, because also with our loyalty campaign, with getting more data on our customers, we also start pushing additional messages and additional
SMS,
SMS and additional offers to our customers. So this also had influence on our costs.
Yeah. Now then, Moscow, St. Pete. We're actually very excited with the outcome of our like-for-like in the fourth quarter, because as you probably remember, it was always a bit of a problem for Magnet to get traction in the bigger cities. But we're getting there now finally. So we in our plan for this year, we dedicate 25% of our expansion to St. Pete, Moscow. We believe that that we need more brand equity in those towns. And also, by the way, looking at e-commerce, Those cities are actually pretty illegible to e-commerce, and I think we need more presence to get people come and also visit us online.
Kirill, just to remind you that last year we did a big step forward in our expansion in the Northwest, especially in St. Pete. In addition to Murmansk, we actually opened a lot of stores in the premises of the former big retailer Intertorq, around 170 stores last year, which is a big part, quite sizable, of our total expansion last year.
Okay, great. That's all clear. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
We will now take our final question from Arthur Galimod of Sova Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Let me join congratulations with the strong results, particularly on the cash flow and working capital side. My question would sound like this. Where do you see the top sources for upside in terms of both growth and margins for this year, maybe in the midterm, in context of some sort of normalization of consumer behavior that we're still looking for, potentially going into the second half of the year? Basically, as far as I understand, you still want to keep increasing your margins from the levels of 2020. However, obviously, I think we will see a deceleration of like-for-likes, sales density growth this year from a very high base of 2020. So where do you see the biggest potential for Magnet to keep improving further in terms of both efficiency and sales?
Yeah, thank you, Arthur. I think we haven't changed the plan, so I think I see top line is one of the important areas to focus on. Potentially, we might have a bit more moderate expectation, but looking at our expansion, I think we should keep an eye on top line, so sales densities. The second one, top driver, is gross margin. I think negotiations, but also optimization, promo optimization, partly potentially also shrink optimization is one of the things where I expect that we would, and we're not talking about points, but we talk about bits. But there's there I see opportunity, and then I also believe with a bit of restructuring of supply chain, and that's potentially important for our big boxes to go for different flow type, that we also there might see some advantages coming in cost. And bear in mind, we opened 3 DCs in comparison to last year. So we opened Surgut, we opened Novosibirsk, but we also reopened our Voronezh DC. That should also start to tick in, because there we see some logistic advantages coming in as well. The biggest threat is, of course, marketing, where I think we will have to spend more, certainly if we want to get traction on the e-commerce. And where I'm also concerned is the utilities, because that's always something you cannot influence. We will continue pushing pressure on rent rates, which we were successfully doing last year as well, and I think we should continue doing that this year to get a better balance between returns of landlords and returns of us.
Jan, maybe let me add also to this. If you talk about chances for this year, we still invest quite a lot in our loyalty program,
and
we are only at the beginning of monetization of insights with the help of customers. Yeah, so this should help us a bit. And if you're talking about risks and threats, we also might face some tariffs increase not only in utilities but also in some kind of facility services. Yeah. Like cleaning, transportation services, outstaffing, which might happen because of lack of personnel and some widening of this market, further widening of this market.
So, Arthur, basically, most of the chances are coming from the level of the top line and gross profit.
Right, and I think you also mentioned that you're still determined to extract more improvements from the working capital side. Obviously, the magnitude of those improvements are unlikely to be as significant as we saw in 2020, but still some improvements should be underway, if I understand correctly.
Yes, what Jan and Dmitry mentioned is that we still target and are putting our efforts to get improvements of the working capital in days to turnover, while, of course, we should be careful as we don't plan to get the same scale of improvements versus last year, as, just to quote Dima, most of the low-hanging fruits have been already collected.
Right, thanks for this. And the very final from me on competition. We know pretty well what's going on with your largest competitors that report their results. So my question would be about competition coming from smaller players, from strong regional players that are not public, but that still make a difference for regional competitive landscape. What do you see? How things changed? Do you think that the pandemic will continue to change in the landscape? What players benefit? What players are quitting the market? And what's the outlook for this year?
Competition has always been there. So I think it's more important that you focus on yourself and where do you see opportunities for improvements. What I see is that with the improvements that we made in the customer value proposition, the CVP, that we have actually grown our market share last year. We see, by the way, as well that some local players are also picking up, but also some local players are getting into trouble. I think for us, it's important that we continuously year on year make improvements in value drivers for the customers. And if we do that, then I guess that also customers will recognize and continue shopping with us, but also come shopping with us. And that's what we have seen. And I want to see that this year as well. There is improvement opportunity still there.
Thank you very much, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
John, I think with that we conclude the call, but just wanted to remind the audience that in 2 weeks, on 18th of February, you are welcome for Magnit's Capital Markets Day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.
Thanks, everyone.